This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Tactics here on Monday. No, we're starting a little early, but I've actually got an event that I've got to get to, and I'm helping, so I kind of have to do it. But since I did want to do the show live and I wanted to be with you this evening, thank you for joining us, whether you're joining us on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, Periscope, all of our followers on all of our platforms. We appreciate you making us a part of your very busy day, and we appreciate you joining us because right here on Tactics, as you know, speech isn't violence. Tolerance isn't love, and disagreement isn't hate. So thank you so much for coming to the program, and as always, we try to bring you the absolute best, most up-to-date news anywhere that you can find in the state of Alabama. And if you know anything about the state of Alabama, you know that an event did happen this weekend that actually is a pretty big deal in the state of Alabama. So, Auburn did beat Alabama. I'm wearing the new Iron Bowl shirt, so I'm pretty excited about it. A lot of people are pretty excited about it, and, you know, I'm not trying to rub it in anybody's face, but I'm a pretty big Auburn fan. And, like I said, I don't want to rub it in or anything. I'm just excited. And it is my school. It's where I went. So I'm going to celebrate a little bit, and I think that I'm entitled to. I do it one time a year, and I know that this isn't a sports show, but we are going to talk about it because it is the biggest news story in the state of Alabama, and it always is. So thank you so much for joining us on the program. If you're an Alabama fan and you're offended, I'm sorry. I know I just alienated like at least 60% of my audience, probably more than that considering I'm based out of Montgomery, but nonetheless, it is what it is. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the game, and I'm not going to get into the X's and O's and all that really deep analysis. For that, you can go to Sports Radio 740. The Fallout's actually on right now, so I'm sure that Joe Hunk and Russell Terry and MK and Will and all those guys are knee-deep in the details of the game. But regardless of where you were or where you stood, it was a great game to watch if you didn't have a stake in the game. Like, if you didn't care who won, you're just an outside observer that isn't really interested in Alabama or Auburn, but you like college football, phenomenal game. Cause it, I mean, that was a wild and crazy game that, just tons of back and forth, all kinds of crazy things happen. And it was really gut wrenching regardless of which side you were on to watch it, especially like there was just so much going on there. For example, and this was just an excellent microcosm of the entirety of the game. If you're looking at the tail end of the first half, if you watched like the last 4 or 5 minutes, there was so much scoring. It was so back and forth. Everything was nuts. It's one of the craziest, I would say, about 4 or 5 minutes of football I've ever seen. And I'm an Auburn fan, so I'm accustomed to crazy things happening on the field. But I have to say this, and I'm not saying this as a jab, but Bama, seriously, what is going on with your kickers? I mean, yes, I revel in it and I do think it's funny, but on a serious note, not trying to rub anybody's nose in it or anything, I'm just genuinely asking, like, why can Alabama not have good kickers? It's such a weird Achilles heel for them to have. It's very, very strange. And I don't understand why a top tier team like Alabama has such a very, very difficult time recruiting something that every other team seems to not really have a problem with getting at least a decent kicker. I mean, yeah, you occasionally get somebody like Carlson the Older, who's just a freak of nature, and pretty much anywhere past the 50-yard line, he makes it automatically. But I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about somebody that can, you know, consistently make a 25, 30-yarder. It's so weird that Alabama has that one giant glaring weakness. I don't understand why that's the case. I'll say this, though. The best two players, as far as this game, I'm not saying that they're the best athletes on the field, but the best two players in this game, for sure, I think there's absolutely no doubt on Alabama's side, it's Jaylen Waddle. that guy is a freak of nature. Like, you were watching him march down the field and everybody else looked like they were in slow motion. Every time his hand touched the football, I was scared to death. And I'm not even talking about the, what was it, 89 return for a touchdown. I mean, you would watch him, and on plays where he would just have to run, he would be beating guys at an angle. We'd be coming at him at an angle, and he'd, you know, we'd have a head start, and he'd still wind up beating our guys down the sideline. It was just absurd. That guy is an insanely good athlete, and I've not really watched a whole lot of Alabama football because I'm, you know, so obsessed with Auburn this season. But and then Seth Williams, that one-handed catch, I mean, that looked like an NFL wide receiver. And I think on that side of the ball, there's no question that Seth Williams really kind of made the game. And I know that you need to give credit to Bo Nix for throwing some really good passes. He looked a lot better. Granted, there were some times where he didn't look so good, but he looked a lot better against Alabama than he has against a lot of other SEC teams. And I get that Bo Nix deserves some credit for that, but it really helps to have a receiver that is as good with his hands. I mean, if the ball gets near Seth Williams, he's probably going to catch it. As long as he doesn't have like three guys covering him and the ball comes uninterrupted in his general vicinity, he's probably going to get it. And I commend those guys, two young men that are very, very good at what they do. And the big kicker, and I don't mean that in a pun way, the thing that really kicks you in the gut is how many injuries they had. It was nice to see that Tua was feeling better. I mean, he looked like he was in good spirits. Obviously, he wasn't thrilled with the result of the game, but he looked like he was in good spirits. He seems like a super nice guy, and I really like and respect Tua Tagovailoa. Really worried about Schwartz. And both sides had quite a few injuries, and not just injuries. I mean, obviously, it's a terrible thing whenever any athlete gets injured, but not just injuries to people that you don't know. I mean, star players on both sides. It felt like for a good chunk of time in the middle of the second quarter, it felt like everybody was made out of glass. It was every other play, somebody, Auburn and Alabama, was down. And so, kind of worried about that, but that's a pretty good wrap up of everything. I do think that the results of this game, they're going to have to do something to clarify what the rule is on that. You remember at the tail end, the field goal attempt by Auburn, and Saban was arguing that they have to have 3 seconds because they can't spike the ball. And what happened is, because of the review and looking at the clock, basically what that review did is give Auburn a free timeout. And I understand that that is unfair, because if they hadn't had to go back and review the clock to make sure there was a second, they wouldn't have had a chance to do all those substitutions and get their field goal kicking team in. So I do understand the gripe, but it is a weird gray area in the rules. And of course, Saban thought that it read one way. Malzahn argued that it was the other way. But based on, and I tried to look this up and did a little research on it and actually got an opinion from a rules expert. It's kind of a weird gray area that they haven't clarified all that well. And so I have a feeling what's going to happen is they're going to clarify and probably make up a new rule within college football. NCAA will, specifically because of what happened to Auburn in that strange scenario that they were in. So I think that we'll see that. Now, there's several things that I want to give a reaction to that sort of happened afterward, several of them big news stories. There was one article I was reading by Spencer Hall at BannerSociety.com, which I thoroughly enjoyed. It's a fantastic read, and I'm going to tell you the headline here in a second. So if you want to look it up on your own, I'm sure you can search something to this effect, and it'll give it to you. I may just go ahead and post it on my social media sites as well, so you can take a look at it. But anyway, it is by Spencer Hall, and it's titled, "The Auburn Tigers, College Football's Greatest Ruiner of Things." And I'm not going to go into all the details or go through all the different scenarios, because this is a very long article, but it's just a long record, and it doesn't even go into everything. It's a long record of how Auburn has such a weird habit of ruining things that they happen to be involved with. And by the way, And he makes this case in the article. It's not as though Auburn is some kind of evil, mad genius that is only able to ruin things that other people do when it's organized and it's planned out. He's saying, no, they ruin things for other teams, and they also ruin things for themselves an awful lot as well, which is true. I think that may be the best summary of what it's like to live as an Auburn Tiger. Things just constantly get ruined, and you can't really explain why. Sometimes it's you, sometimes it's somebody else. Sometimes you're destroying Georgia or Alabama's perfect season or ruining their chances at a title or a great bowl game or something like that. And sometimes you just shoot yourself in your own foot. That happens. It's kind of like, in a lot of ways, and I love my team. Obviously, you can look at the trappings around me and tell that I'm a big, big Auburn guy. Sometimes when it comes to being an Auburn fan, it kind of feels like your football team is a drunk guy with a submachine gun. Like, there's a good chance he's going to hurt himself, and there's also a good chance he's going to take out somebody you don't like. But either way, that's who he is. He's just a drunk guy stumbling around with a machine gun. And sometimes you get shot in the foot. Sometimes you take out a rival. It's just a really weird dynamic. Then he's right, and he makes the case with excruciating detail of how this is just what Auburn is. They constantly ruin things for themselves and others, and it's really, really funny. And I don't mean this in the quirky Gen Z millennial kind of way. I literally laughed out loud. I was sitting there reading, and I was actually laughing audibly. So check it out. I very much recommend it. It's a very accurate depiction of life as an Auburn fan. And what's really crazy is that this article that I'm talking about was written 2 weeks ago. It was written on November the 13th. So long before the Iron Bowl was even started, long before the game even kicked off, he was already saying, Auburn just has a weird habit of ruining things for people. And then, of course, we ruined Alabama's chance to go to the BCS for the first time. I mean, it is funny watching the Alabama fans all gripe about not being in the championship for the first time since there's been a playoff. So I guess they can complain if they want to, but I kind of feel like you're griping. It's kind of like the football equivalent to a first world problem. It's like, Alabama, woe is me, you're not in the BCS championship. Oh yeah, it must be so terrible for you. I mean, every year there's hundreds and hundreds of colleges that don't even get close. And this is the first time since they've had one, you're not in it, and you're really upset. Now, I get it. Losing sucks. I understand that. And I get that Alabama has high expectations, but I mean, come on, guys. You can go a year without being in the BCS championship. Other teams need a turn, too. So that's just kind of my take on it. There was a really funny story as well out of Auburn, and this is one of the reasons that I love the Auburn family. I love Auburn people. It's because we do goofy, quirky stuff like this all the time, and it really is the Auburn family. So this is a tweet that was put out by one of the dean of students, so he actually has the power to back this up. His name is Joe Astrup, and he is the dean of the College of Liberal Arts, which, by the way, my diploma is not from the College of Liberal Arts. I was an ag major, but I was an ag communication major, so I actually do know of him, and I know a lot of the people in that department, so this does not surprise me at all from the College of Liberal Arts at Auburn. So this is the tweet he put out right after the Iron Bowl. It is undeniable that when every second counts, Auburn men and women make great things happen. Under Coach Malzahn's leadership, student athletes have twice proven the difference that 1 second can make. In the spirit of continued success, I hereby authorize professors and instructors to add 1 second to their allotted times for next week's final exam. All right, so there you have it. Your Auburn students are getting an extra second on their finals, and I know that they are appreciative of it because every second can count. I don't know. I think it can make a lot bigger difference in a football game than it can on a final exam, but, you know, 1 second definitely wouldn't have hurt me when it came to some of my finals. But that's a good thing. And one thing that's funny, too, with the College of Liberal Arts, you don't have that many actual written finals. So it's great that he's doing this, and I love that the Auburn family just goes all in for things like this. But at the same time, I'm very aware of the fact that perhaps more than many of the other departments on campus, in the liberal arts college, most of your finals aren't finals. And by that, I don't mean they're not written exams. Because I remember in the vast majority of my liberal arts courses, my finals were papers or projects. It was very rare for me to have a written exam in one of the College of Liberal Arts classes. I had it for, I think, Mass Comm and Human Communication and a couple of others. But by and large, most of my finals were projects or papers that I had to turn in, so that 1 second wouldn't have really made a difference. But I don't know. I did find that horribly amusing. Anyway, Bama just does have bad luck with those 1 second deals. But one other big news story that came out, and this one really does irk me, but Auburn has been fined $250,000 for storming the field. The reason that the fine is so insanely exorbitant is that the SEC policy, this is how it reads, it imposes a $50,000 fine for the first offense up to, notice it says up to, but it doesn't necessarily mean it has to be $100,000, up to $100,000 for the second offense, and up to $250,000 for the third and subsequent offenses. So, first of all, you have to be aware of the fact that the SEC rules require that you're fined $50,000. But in the subsequent offenses, they can charge more if they want to. However, that's a cap, not a requirement. The SEC could have fined just $50,000. I don't know why that level of discretion is left in there up to the SEC, but they announced that they are going to fine Auburn the full penalty as much as humanly possible. And yes, the money does go to a good cause. It goes to the postgraduate scholarship fund for SEC athletes. I get that it helps out students. That's a good thing. I'm glad that they're getting the money, but I don't like the fact that they're fining Auburn to do it. And there's a couple reasons why I'm going to do that. First of all, I understand the purpose of the rule. There's several reasons why you do not want, as a organization, you do not want your fans storming the field. As a college, you could take it or leave it, maybe. But there's a couple of reasons why that's a bad idea. First of all, when you storm the field, the players, the coaches, the refs, they're all still on the field. And for the same reason you wouldn't want a single fan jumping on the field in the middle of the game, you also wouldn't want them storming the field after the game, because there could be somebody mixed in there that wants to, like, let's say there was a crazy Alabama fan that would do crazy things and break the law. Let's call him Harvey Updike. I'm just throwing out a random name just out of the top of my head. Let's call him Harvey Updike. Let's say that there were a crazy Bama fan that were willing to break the law because of his fanship, and he wanted to just, I don't know, go stab Bo Nix or something like that with his pocket knife. Like, that's the reason that they avoid that. I'm not saying that that's something that would happen a lot, or that it should, obviously. I'm just saying that there are real legitimate reasons for that. The same could be said of the referees. Like, let's say that you just, your team won, but it was very close, and you feel like the referees stiffed you, and somebody could go down and hurt the refs, hurt one of the coaches. There's a very good reason for the rule, and I understand it. But there's a difference in the rule and the penalty, and this is really where I draw the line here. And first of all, I kind of want to hear some other opinions on this. Feel free to comment in the comment section, whether you're on Facebook or YouTube. Is this a good rule or not? Do you think that this is a good rule, and do you think that it could maybe be imposed differently or punished differently? If you have any ideas, feel free to comment in the comment section. But here's my problem with it. It's an understandable rule. It just has a really, really dumb enforcement policy. And the reason that I say that is people that are committing the offense are not penalized for it. Because, yes, understandably, you would want the people that are in the stands to not actually go down on the field for several reasons that I just listed, but they're also not the ones that incur a fine for it. You're fining the university, not the people that stormed the field. And that's why it's a problem. I mean, it would be almost like, it's not quite this bad, but this was the best metaphor that I could come up with. It would be like pulling over somebody in a red Mustang because red Mustangs, you saw another red Mustang speeding earlier. Like, it doesn't make any sense. You're penalizing, or actually, this is a much better analogy. I just came up with this off the top of my head. Start fining the person in the passenger seat and in the back seat for what the driver did. Like, it doesn't make any sense. The person that actually broke the rule is not the one being punished for breaking the rule. And that's why I think the fining system is really dumb. I think the rule should stand, but they have to find a better way to enforce it. And that would just kind of be where I come across on that. And you have to remember that the reason that that Auburn has incurred this fine is because they've incurred it before, once with 2013, once with 2017 in the Iron Bowl when they beat Bama at home then. 2013 makes perfect sense. I would have stormed the field had I been there in 2013, and totally worth it. I don't think that anybody questions that. That's one of the most amazing plays in college football history. And especially when you consider the ramifications and Auburn just taking them down like that and winding up going to the national championship, there's a good reason that Auburn fans had to storm the field. And nothing, as you know, as Rod Bramlett pointed out, the now late great Rod Bramlett, as Rod pointed out, like, you weren't going to keep him off the field tonight. That's not going to happen. And so I get it then. 2017, still a very big deal that we took down Bama. This year, Alabama already has one loss, and even if they had beaten us, they still probably wouldn't have wound up in the BCS playoff system. So I'm kind of confused as to why the Auburn faithful chose to storm the field this year. And I'm confused by that, and also kind of trying to figure out, like, is this just our thing? Like, are we going to storm the field every single time we beat Alabama now? Because I'm not in favor of that. Like, storming the field is only special if you do it on very rare occasions. And so I think that really the whole storming the field thing, this was not the right time to do it. However, this is the counterargument to that. It is our field. And the fact that the SEC can tell us that you're not allowed to storm your own field and we're going to fine you for storming your own field, that to me is a problem. Now, I do think that the university should try to figure out a way to penalize the people and the students and the faculty and the alumni that do storm the field. I'm just saying I don't know how to do that. So somebody, please, by all means, if you have a more creative solution, fire off in the comments below. But it's just a really odd policy because you're not actually punishing. It's not a deterrent to the people that are making the decision to defy the rule. And that's why the rule is a bad idea. If you had something similar going on in the legal system, I would say exactly the same thing. You can't make a penalty something that does not affect the person committing the offense. Because then it's not a deterrent for them. They're just doing something that might tangentially hurt them kind of in a roundabout way. But do you think any of those fans, alumni, students, do you think that they're going to lose any sleep over and suffer over that fine being incurred? No. It doesn't hurt them. It doesn't hurt their family. It doesn't hurt their pocketbook. So, yeah, I'm sorry. That's a really, really dumb policy. Especially when you consider that it's our field. And another thing that bothers me about that, real quick before we move on, is that at least theoretically, you could actually get another school fined. Like, let's say you're just nearby, you have a whole bunch of fans. We could storm Bryant-Denny next year if we win, and then the University of Alabama gets a fine. Well, how is that fair? You could do the same thing at, you know, any other school. And so there's several reasons why this is a really, really bad policy. But the thing is, the Iron Bowl, I get that it's just a game. I know that it's just a sporting event, but it means so much to the people in the state, and there is good reason for that. We won, and that's great, and I'm really excited about that, but I would advise everybody to do this. Exercise the golden rule here. Because when it comes to winning, just remember that your team is not always going to be the Iron Bowl champion. There's a very realistic chance that, you know, 365 days from now, we'll be coming off of a loss to Alabama at Bryant-Denny. So just remember that you're not always going to be in the winner's seat, and you need to behave in such a way that if the roles were reversed and Alabama had won the game, treat other people the way that you would want to be treated. It's okay to have fun with it. I certainly am. Just remember that when you're talking to other fans of other teams when you've beaten them, to act the way that you would want them to treat you when you lost to them. Because eventually you're going to be in that position. And finally, on a much more somber note, because this weekend was a really great time of happiness and celebration and joy for a lot of Auburn fans, it's also a really sad one. Because Sunday, Pat Sullivan died. Pat Sullivan, who was Auburn's first Heisman winner and the state of Alabama's first Heisman winner. We've had several since then, most of them from Alabama or Auburn, and even one from Florida State with their player that was from the state of Alabama. But Pat Sullivan was the first. And quietly, in his sleep, probably sometime very early Sunday morning, he passed away. So there's no indication that he would have felt any pain or anything like that, so that's certainly a blessing. But at the age of 69, Pat Sullivan is no longer with us. And to kind of emphasize the kind of athlete that he was, there have only been 9 other players from the state of Alabama in all of college football history that has been awarded the title All-American unanimously. We've had several All-Americans, but he's one of only 10 that were awarded that title unanimously. There was no one that thought, no, let's go with somebody else. And there's just so many memories surrounding him. I'd like to share a couple that I saw. Kevin Steele, Auburn's current defensive coordinator. As a young first, second, third, fourth grader growing up in this stadium, coming here, I mean, I wore number 7 in junior high, and I was a quarterback at Prattville Junior High. I don't think I need to tell you why I wore number 7. Pat Sullivan's number 7 jersey, of course, has been retired at Auburn University. And then I think that it says a lot about a person when even their enemies can compliment them. And there was one statement that I saw from Bear Bryant. He does more things to beat you than any quarterback I've ever seen. I think of that as quite a compliment from Bear Bryant, because when even somebody that is opposed to you has to admit that you're a very skilled and worthy adversary, especially somebody of Bear Bryant's caliber, that is a great testament to your athletic ability, and in this case, Pat Sullivan's tenacity. So, as much as he will be missed by the Auburn family, I know that his legacy is going to continue to live on. My generation doesn't remember seeing Bo Jackson play. I don't remember seeing Bo Jackson play because by the time that I was aware enough of who Bo Jackson even was, his career had already ended in the NFL and the MLB. So, of course, we don't even come close to remembering Pat Sullivan. But the influence that he had over our university is still being felt to this day. Some of the things that he set up and put into motion with his talent, his leadership, those things are still being felt at Auburn University today. There was an air of excellence, and one of the things that Pat Sullivan really did is Auburn, because they look at football as something to, you know, strive to be good at, they've always taken it seriously.
But one of the things that Pat Sullivan really did for the community and for the environment surrounding Auburn athletics was gigantic, because it was one of the first times that Auburn really felt like it was really important on the national stage. Now, I'm not saying it was him alone, but I'm saying he was a big contributing factor to people thinking of Auburn as a important national force when it came to college football. And there are an awful lot of states, that have a top-tier big conference state school, and then maybe one other one that kind of competes with them, but not really. I mean, you've got Georgia and Georgia Tech, for example. You've got Tennessee and Vanderbilt. You've got Kentucky and Louisville. There's a lot of states that have that big state school, and then they're kind of lesser school as far as athletics go. I'm not trying to speak anything to their academic prowess. That's a common thing. And it would not have been something that would be unusual for Auburn to be that in the state of Alabama. But the fact that Alabama has two top-tier, nationally recognized titans of a team, both in the SEC, and that they're both such a big deal, and that their matchups are pretty even, is, at least in part, a testament to the work that people like Pat Sullivan put into that university. And we thank him for his contributions, even if we don't remember him playing. We didn't grow up talking about Pat Sullivan or watching Pat Sullivan because he was before our time, but your contributions are still very much appreciated. We'll go to a break and we'll come back in just a minute.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Now you messed it up. You're stupid.
All right, so today's Daily Dose of Stupid, this one is a strange one. And I don't think that it really needs a ton of introduction, so I'll just get right to it. It's Joe Biden talking. And I know that that's not much to go on, but when it comes to crazy Uncle Joe, that's really about all you need. So here it is.
And by the way, you know, I sit on the stand and it get hot. I got hairy legs that turn that turn blonde in the sun. And the kids used to come up and reach in the pool and rub my leg down so it was straight, and then watch the hair come back up again. They'd look at it. So I learned about roaches. I learned about kids jumping on my lap. And I've loved kids jumping on my lap. And I tell you what, the men, they're now all men, the guys I work with down here, and they're all guys at the time, they're all good men. Most of them made an awful lot of themselves. And Earl Larkin had a rough time. And some of you knew Earl. I came back as a public defender.
Okay. Joe Biden, for the vast majority of his political career, has been a gaffe machine and a half. Like, that's something that just comes with the territory for Joe Biden. But usually his gaffes are just something goofy, or he says something, I don't know, absent-minded. That was a full-on train wreck. Like, that's not just like telling, hey, everybody to stand, and telling the guy in the wheelchair to stand. Like, I mean, granted, that's bad. But that's at least a mistake that you could kind of get, oh, well, he just wasn't thinking or something like that. Like, I have no idea where the crap that came from. That was so far out of left field. There was nothing in that snippet that could even be mistaken accidentally as a coherent thought. He starts rambling on about hairy legs and then roaches, and then something about guys that he used to work with, and in the pool, kids would rub his legs and sit on his lap. Like, I have no idea how to even react to that. It really does look like we took several different snippets out of like a 30-minute speech and jumbled them together and you know, shook them up in a bag and then threw them out randomly. But that's one complete clip. That's him talking completely unedited. And I have no idea how he even came up with that. First of all, and I say this as a professional communicator, you should always be incredibly cautious whenever discussing anything about body hair. Like, that tends to gross people out. You don't want to do it. So that's an odd choice right out of the gate. The strangest line in that whole exchange is where he talks about kids running up and sitting on his lap. And I love when kids run up and sit on my lap. And I'm just like, oh gosh, Joe. I've never bought into the idea that Joe Biden is a pedophile. I don't think that that's the case. I just think that he's super, super creepy, especially with kids. Because he's also super creepy with women, like adult women. But does sort of similar creepy things with little kids. And I don't really understand why. That may be like a psychological thing because he lost his son at a young age, or I don't know. But the point is, the dude is creepy around kids. If you already have a reputation of being creepy around kids, you certainly don't talk about how much you love it when kids run up and sit in your lap. Like, I get that it was probably completely innocent, but oh my gosh, it looks horrible. Like, the optics on that are garbage. The fact that Joe Biden just goes stumbling through that whole exchange. This is why a lot of Democrats are understandably incredibly worried about Joe Biden being their candidate. Because of stuff like that, that you just watch it and you, first of all, you can't look away and you're like, what on earth is going on? Like, what it really does remind you of, and I'm not trying to make light of this. I mean, obviously that, you know, event was pretty funny. But what it does remind you of is if you've ever had a relative that they're getting on up there in years, every once in a while, they'll just start rambling for a few minutes and you have no idea where that thought came from. Or, I mean, granted, sometimes your younger relatives can do this too, but especially older relatives, they're getting at least just a touch senile. That's kind of what that looks like. And I mean, Joe Biden is not exactly a spring chicken. And so I think that there are a lot of people, frankly, on the right and left, that are both understandably worried about Joe Biden's health mentally looking like that. Now, out of the field, he's still the most viable candidate. He's still the one that's doing the best against Trump. He is still, polling-wise, the front runner. But you look at stuff like that and you have to ask, is that going to affect the election? Because I think that it's got to at some point. Because once things like this stack up, and he's already had a few events kind of similar to this, then it becomes abundantly clear that the guy's basically just, I mean, being wheeled up to the stage, dropped off there, allowed to ramble for about 10 minutes, and they wheel him back off the stage and then go to something else because they're afraid he's going to say something else insane and completely incoherent. That is going to really start affecting the way that people make their choices, both in the primary and in the general. Now, as I understand it, Trump's roughly the same age, but he doesn't look the same age. And I think Trump's age does work against him from time to time. But for whatever, you know, Trump's flaws and very many valid criticisms, to my knowledge, he's never had anything that looks like that. I mean, that was sheer unadulterated nonsense for about 60 seconds, and I have no idea where he was going, where it came from, or where it was leading to. Because he goes into something completely different afterward, and he was talking about something completely different before. It's such a weird, it's almost like, you know, you go throughout your normal day, like an episode of The Twilight Zone, and then like something just completely out of place, like a dude with a dog for a head walks by, and you're just like, what just happened here? It was a really strange moment, and I think that Democrats are justifiably wondering, is this guy competent enough to run a national campaign and, you know, maybe even eventually be the president? Here's the thing that it might actually help Democrats. if President Obama decided he wanted to endorse somebody like Bernie Sanders or, you know, another, I would think that he would endorse Sanders if he was going to endorse anybody. But if he wanted to endorse Sanders or Buttigieg or somebody like that in the primary, that's his out. All President Obama has to say is, well, look, Joe Biden is a patriot and he's a, you know, national treasure. We love him, but he's getting gone old and we can't have him in that kind of position anymore. So I'm going to endorse someone else. Now, the problem with that is if you endorse Bernie Sanders is just as insane and senile as Joe Biden. So that excuse wouldn't really work if President Obama wants to endorse him. He still seems like he's a little bit more lucid than Joe Biden, but that excuse kind of doesn't work as well if you're talking about endorsing Bernie Sanders. But most of the other people in the field, yeah, because Elizabeth Warren is roughly the same age as well, but she doesn't seem nearly as old. She doesn't look nearly as old. And so that excuse is going to placate a lot of the people that were expecting President Obama to endorse Joe Biden. So maybe that works out. That may be the only advantage to that, is that Joe Biden can endorse somebody other than President Obama can endorse somebody other than Joe Biden, and then other Democrats can feel good about that we're big fans of Obama going with that new candidate because of that. That may be the only thing that helps Democrats down the road, but that's the only positive I can see coming out of this, because when your candidate is basically I'm not trying to be morbid here or say that I want Joe Biden to die or anything like that, because obviously I don't. I care about him as a fellow human being and a child and a creation of God. So I'm not saying that to be morbid or anything like that. I'm just saying when Joe Biden looks like he's basically a walking corpse at this point and has almost no energy and it just kind of spits out nonsense like that, that's not a good look for him and his candidacy. All right, well, I actually have somewhere to be, so we'll have to forego the chaplain's report today. But thank you for listening. War Eagle, stay the course, friends.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.